You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
Quarter shoot. Jokic falling away. Puts it in.
It's our pleasure today to introduce you all to Kyle Dubas, the Penguins president of hockey operations.
They ask him, hey, who did you see there? And he starts screaming, Kaiser Saucy!
Bow, bow, bow.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Friday. Sweet, sweet Friday. It is Halford, it is Bruff, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Bruff in the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program, 96 seconds into it. Hour one is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com.
And, of course, you know that we're coming to you live from the Kintech Studio, Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net.
It is a Friday. That means it's Ask Us Anything Friday here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. Get yours in. Text line 650-650. Mike, the urologist from Brockville, has already sent in not one, not two, but three Ask Us Anythings. That's the bar for listeners right now. That's the gold standard that we hold here at the Halbro Experience. Get yours in. You can ask us about literally anything. Life, love. Do you have any romance questions you'd like to throw our way? We'll answer them. Maybe not well, but we'll answer them. As for the actual show itself, four guests today. Begins at 6:30. Justin Cuthbert, who's like the Us of Toronto.
Oh, okay.
He does the Fan 590 morning show in Toronto. He's going to join us on the heels
of... Is
he
self-loathing as well? Does he not care for himself?
I don't know. First question. Justin, yeah. Self-loathing? We'll ask. We are going to ask him about what was a zany day in Toronto yesterday for Leafs fans. Really the entire city. As the Bradtree Living press conference was hijacked by Kyle Dubas.
God, that was funny.
It was the best day. So we'll ask Justin about that, what that was like at 6:30. 7 o'clock, Daniel Kaplan is going to join us. He's a sports business writer for The Athletic. There's this really big story going on in Major League Baseball that not a lot of people, I think, are paying attention to.
It's too complicated.
For one, it's very complicated. I don't really understand it. It's got to do with TV rights and not paying contracts and losing those TV rights. We'll talk to Daniel Kaplan about that. Also, there's an update on the Evander Kane bankruptcy case that we can talk to him about as well. 8 o'clock, it's EJ Raddick, our NHL insider from NHL Network, is going to join us on the eve of the Stanley Cup Final. Game one between the Florida Panthers and the Vegas Golden Knights goes tomorrow. We'll talk to EJ today at 8 o'clock. And finally, at 8:30, the owner of the BC Lions, Amar Doman. And what a time to get Amar on this program. Us booking him and his massive announcement from last night were in no way related, just purely coincidental. But last night, Amar Doman dropped a bomb on the city. Not literally, but he announced that for the home opener against the Elks, the pregame musical act is going to be LL Cool J. I'm not joking. LL Cool J is going to be playing a
yes,
BC Lions
game. Lions fans, we're going back to Cali.
That's right.
With LL Cool J.
I can't believe it.
That's pretty cool.
When they said they had a musical announcement, I'm like, just tell us that it's going to be Rascal Flatts and we'll all move on. Okay? Just do it. Or Billy Talent. Those were two options that I had right at the top. LL Cool J is a big get. I am going to go. I think you should go as well. I think we all should go. We'll all wear Kangols together.
How old is LL Cool J now?
He's got to be...
78.
No, he's not 78.
He's in his 50s.
He's got to be between the ages of 50 and 60, I would imagine. We can look this up. We have this box in
55.
Front of us. 55. Here we go. Perfect.
It's going to be a toned-down event and nice and...
What's his real name?
Acoustic.
LL Cool J's real name?
Yeah.
Well, it's J. Ladies love Cool J, right?
It's James Todd Smith.
Oh. No wonder I went with LL Cool J.
He doesn't even have one L in there? Let alone two L's?
No.
Ladies love.
Ladies love Cool J. Wow. And J is James.
Okay.
They don't love JT.
So working in reverse, the owner of the BC Lions, Amar Doman, is going to join us at 8:30. EJ Raddick from NHL Network at 8. Daniel Kaplan from The Athletic at 7. And Justin Cuthbert from the Fan 590 in Toronto at 6:30. That's what's happening on the program today. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No.
No, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
You missed that?
What happened?
We begin with the big game of the night. Game one of the NBA Finals from the altitude in Denver. And the Nuggets took care of business in rather convincing fashion. Nikola Jokic, another triple-double. I can't believe I just say it like that. That's another triple-double in the NBA Finals. No big deal. The Canadian kid, Kitchener's very own Jamal Murray, 26 points. Nuggets, not much of an issue with the Miami Heat in Game 1, a 104-93 win. I won't throw to you too much in this because I know you were out partying last night. Mm-hmm. Jason was partying.
Yeah, I saw the first quarter, though, and I think I saw the game because I saw the first quarter. The Denver Nuggets looked a lot better than Miami.
Miami had been a perfect 3-0 in series openers throughout these playoffs, but Denver was unbeaten at home. So something had to give last night, yeah. And it gave the way of the Nuggets. Game one winners in the NBA Finals go on to win nearly 70% of the time. Your assessment was fairly accurate because not only did the Nuggets get out to a big lead in the first quarter and kind of kept that throughout the game was never really close. Nikola Jokic also barely shot the ball in quarter one. He continued to do that in quarters two, three, and four, mm-hmm. yet still managed to post a triple-double and completely dominate the game. Here's more from Jokic on his approach to basketball and how he doesn't need to score the ball to win games and maybe win an NBA championship. Here's the two-time MVP, Nikola Jokic, after a game one victory over the Miami Heat.
I mean, he had a couple of mid-range shots. I think he's supposed to make that. He's shooting the ball really well, and we all want him to shoot that kind of shots. He's really good at mid-range. He's really good at threes, too. But, I mean, as long as he's aggressive, I think he's playing the whole playoff. He's playing really well and creating for himself and for his teammates really nice looks.
He did not appear to say anything about being unselfish and passing the basketball. That was Michael Porter.
He was blowing up his teammate is what he was
saying. That was Michael Porter. That was actually the funny part about that quote that we didn't even get in there was that he thought Michael Porter had hit like 7 or 8 3-pointers. And he was like 2 for 9. He's like, it felt so much better. Point being, the Heat are in trouble. Heat culture is in trouble. Jimmy Butler is in trouble. Eric Spoelstra is in trouble in this series. Now, there's two ways that they can look at it after game one. They could say, hey, we just went a grueling 7 games with Boston. We came into this series. We had to play at altitude in Denver. And the reasons that we lost this game, maybe there's two of them. One, do you know how many free throws the Miami Heat and Jimmy Butler collectively shot last
night? I saw
this
in the recap, and I couldn't believe it.
Two free throws. That is the fewest free throw attempts in NBA Finals history in a single game.
I have a question for you.
I don't even know how that happens.
Were the Heat just jacking up threes at the end?
Like,
is that all they were doing?
Well, that was the second part of my little, this is two things we can fix. They did shoot a fair amount of threes, although not that uncommon in the current NBA.
How did they only get to the line twice?
They did
or
not.
Once, I guess.
They did not penetrate the paint to go to the rim. They just weren't aggressive, and especially Jimmy Butler. Because one thing that you love about Jimmy Butler is the power drive.
Yeah.
That he'll put his head down and he'll go
just
to the rim.
And
when shots aren't falling, it's a very tried and true practice in the National Basketball Association to go get free throws. Because
right.
those are easy to make. And how do you get free throws? Well, you be aggressive and drive. So they didn't drive. They didn't attack the rim. They could do that more. It's really easy to do. You just put your head down and dribble and go to the rim. The other thing was the threes. It was not a good night for Max Strus from beyond the arc. I mean, he was dreadful. And he's a guy that routinely hits threes. 0 for 9. That's bad.
Oh, he didn't even make one.
Did not make a single one.
Okay.
0 for 9.
That's going to be a problem.
And it really sunk.
Was anyone out there like, hey, Max, pass the ball.
Try not shooting anymore. After the 7th one that you missed, please stop doing that. Here's a good stat. The second player in 45 years to take that many shots and not make one in an NBA Finals game.
So is there a bit of, hey, it's a make-or-miss league. If we just make a few more of these, we can be right in these games?
Yes.
For the Heat?
However, However, there's a bigger problem here, and it's the two-time MVP and a gigantic mountain of a man in Nikola Jokic.
Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, I do know. But I don't know if the Heat have anybody that can guard him one-on-one.
Is he going to average a triple-double yes. in this NBA Finals?
Yes.
Right.
He will. Because yeah. here's the crazy stat. When we talk about making your teammates better, we talk about it in hockey all the time, right? Like the primary assists and the secondary assists. How do you make your teammates better? The Heat were down 21 points to the Nuggets going into the fourth quarter last night, right? They were pretty much out of the game.
Yeah.
At that point, going into quarter four, Nikola Jokic had shot the ball five times.
Right.
Five. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. In a league where guys will routinely jack up 25 shots a night. He just picked them apart by doing everything else other than scoring. So here's the scary thing for the Heat. They're like, well, there's some things that we can correct in game one. In game two, it's going to be, what happens if Nikola Jokic decides to start scoring?
Right.
Because he can do that, too.
Yeah.
And it's a very big problem for Miami moving forward. I'm not ready to write them off because they've been written off in every series so far. Going into it, they've been written off. And then when they lost the three straight games against Boston, God, they were almost 10-point underdogs going mm-hmm. into game seven. So everyone has doubted them in the past.
I love watching Jokic play.
It's remarkable.
It is. He does things that you're just like, that shouldn't happen.
So 14 assists in an NBA Finals game is an all-time record,
right.
surpassing a record that was held previously by Bill Russell. Mm-hmm. That's what he does. On either breaks a Bill Russell record or a Wilt Chamberlain record on a nightly basis. It's pretty remarkable. Bruce Arthur, who we used to have on our show back in the day all the time, he had a really good tweet saying that Steve Nash once explained to him what it is that makes Jokic so unstoppable. So he processes the game at a super high level, like an elite point guard yeah. would. And he has court vision like an elite point guard, mm-hmm. but he's built like an ox. That's the big difference. So he can go in and maneuver and
He's built like a tall ox.
He can find angles, yeah. like height-wise and yeah. length-wise, that other guys just can't because they don't have the physical prowess.
Well, he does that with his passing and his shooting.
Yeah. I mean, his shots are hilarious.
Yeah. That's I can't even describe how he shoots. He's like... Oh, I throws it some like you know
he
what
does
I mean?
The behind like, the head chuck.
Yeah, yeah.
If you
yeah.
were to go to a pickup
yeah,
game,
right?
And there's a guy that's never played basketball before, and he shot the ball. You'd be like, that guy's never played basketball before. Now imagine that guy,
but making all
making
the shots.
Every shot during yeah. the game. You're like, what's going on here? Why is the ball so far behind him? It's this catapult from behind his head.
So he's me, but good.
He's like A-Dog, but Serbian and gigantic and awesome yeah. at basketball.
Okay.
But
like, how do you defend that if he's putting the ball behind his head and he's super tall?
That's 7 feet. You can't.
Yeah.
He did it against Anthony Davis in the Western Conference Finals.
AD was like, well, I tip my cap to you.
That's what they had to do.
Yeah, they did. Really. Yeah.
I asked him to stop it. He wouldn't.
Yeah.
This is my only ability
That's
to.
That's your defense. Yeah. Is begging, basically.
Please don't do that.
So there's the basketball story from game one. We got to move on to the NHL story. So yesterday, as we were on the air, what a moment for us, just as outside observers to the chaos. We know that Bradtree Living's going to talk to the assembled media in Toronto yesterday after being named general manager. What we didn't know is that the Leafs' former general manager, Kyle Dubas, was going to exact his revenge and get cold, cold, beautiful revenge on the Toronto media by, and this is courtesy of the Pittsburgh Penguins, announcing his hire as president of Hockey Ops, a half hour before Bradtree Living was set to go to the podium. It was, in terms of pettiness, like top five petty executive moments in NHL history. It was great. Really petty, really well done. Shortly thereafter, Kyle Dubas met with the media in Pittsburgh and was introduced. And how did they pronounce his surname? Dubas?
Dubas.
Dubas.
Dubas. Oh, nice.
That's what Wiss is going on.
That's the Rammstein version of it?
Yeah.
Nice.
So okay. You say it's petty. I want to agree with you.
How could you not?
Well, because they had to make an announcement.
Not then.
Yes, they had to have a press conference.
They could have done it an hour later.
Okay.
They
could have beefed up on the pronunciation and then done the press conference.
We need to start our press conference the exact same minute as there.
But it didn't start at the same time. The announcement came in half an hour before Bradtree.
It was
Living,
the announcement. That
it was the announcement that yeah. came in and that came in half an hour before Bradtree Living was supposed to start his press conference. But here's the thing: like they have to get this stuff done, or the NHL will tell them get this stuff done before the Stanley Cup final starts.
You know,
I suppose they could have done it today, but It's June 2nd today. Like, you know, they want him to get to work in Pittsburgh. There's things to do. Let's go. Chop, chop.
There was clear. You could almost hear all of the media in Toronto checking their phones for the latest news of the Kyle Dubas hire as Bradtree Living was settling in. You know what it reminded me of? Fun anecdote. Back at the 2014 Winter Classic. Remember that one at the University of Michigan?
Yeah.
Between the Leafs and
the
Red Wings?
Ever.
Yeah. After the game, they added on some extra spice because they announced the U.S. Olympic men's hockey roster. David Poile and Brian Burke and a bunch of other ones were there as well. So it was supposed to be this great celebration of hockey in the U.S. They had this game at the Big House in Michigan. They were going to announce this Olympic roster that was going to be going for gold at Sochi. But unbeknownst, I think maybe to the guys that did the selection, ESPN also released its article, the behind-the-scenes look at how the team was picked,
right,
at the exact same time. And there was all those incendiary quotes from Brian Burke about right. Bobby Ryan, and Bobby Ryan couldn't spell intensity if you gave him a dictionary or whatever the quote was. So all the reporters were on their phones reading the ESPN article, and then David Poile's like, we're proud to announce the following players will represent America. And then the reporters were like, I have a question about Bobby Ryan's omission. It was amazing theater at the time. That's what I felt like yesterday. Anyway. To the Kyle Dubas presser, it was interesting, to put it mildly. Do we have the quote about him talking about the big three plus Sully? It's the big four now, by the way. It's Malkin, Letang, Crosby, and Mike Sullivan. It's the big four now. So,
Because Toronto has a core four that Pittsburgh now has to have four?
Kyle was like, I only respect core fours. Big threes, they don't matter to me. Core fours. If you had any question about whether or not Kyle Dubas was all in on the big three plus Sullivan, or if he was going to try and like rebuild the Penguins, here's what he had to say yesterday in his introductory presser.
I heard a lot of people that were highly skeptical of the team's ability to contend here. And the way I view it is that if people want to bet against Mike Sullivan, Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, Chris Letang, and others, they can go ahead and do so, but I'm going to bet on them and go with them here.
So
they're his ride or dies.
Yeah. I mean, Dubas's challenge is the same one that's faced pretty much everyone running Pittsburgh in the Sidney Crosby era. Make sure you surround those guys with better players, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and that's what the Jim Rutherford era was able to do, and the Pittsburgh Penguins won back-to-back Stanley Cups. Now, I think it's going to be harder for Dubas because I think as great as Crosby, Malkin, and Letang still are, I don't think they're as good as they were.
No.
5-6 years ago. You can't trust them as much to stay healthy, especially Malkin and Letang. And you've just got limited time and limited assets to build out the team around them. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Jim Rutherford, Mike Sullivan was brought up from the AHL to coach the Penguins and had immediate success. And that was in large part, I think, because he knew a lot of the players that were brought up from the AHL, and they did a really good job developing players with their AHL team. But Jim Rutherford also made a bunch of smart trades.
Yep.
That was back when trades actually happened. You know, trades were, there wasn't a flat cap, and Jim Rutherford was able to be the gunslinger that I'm sure he'd have liked to be more in Vancouver, but the flat cap didn't allow that to happen.
Yeah.
There were a lot of deals. He made it just like a ton of deals. There was like a trade every month in Pittsburgh.
To shake it up.
And there was a time when a lot of them just, they worked out. And some of them were big trades, like acquiring Phil Kessel. Some of them were smaller trades that people didn't really think much of, like, you know, Hagelin coming in there. But remember, he built an entire, like, it was more than a third line. It even had a name. Like, he built the HBK line, which was so important for the Penguins, especially in their first Stanley Cup. Hagelin came in on a trade. Bonino was with the Canucks, and that was the Brandon Sutter trade. And then Kessel was with the Leafs. And that gave the Pittsburgh Penguins this third line that could run out there and be very productive and take a little bit of the pressure off Malkin and Crosby, because if the other team put all its checkers on those guys, then that third line was getting all these matchups.
So there's a couple.
So that's what Dubas has to do now, but he's got limited time, limited resources to do it.
Yeah. So there's a couple things there. One, When you mentioned Jim Rutherford, it's really funny because a lot of the articles that I read and a lot of the media feedback and just the social media stuff, they all kind of suggested that Dubas was going to be a throwback to the Jim Rutherford style of management, that he was going to be bold and aggressive and he was going to make trades and make moves. Because the one thing he does have at his disposal is like $20 million in cap space.
Yeah, so he's got to use that creatively because I don't think he's going to be able to build out the type of depth that he wants just in free agency.
No, like, but he's got, put it this way, if you want to be the guy that looks at the glass half full, Kyle Dubas is going to say, maybe I don't have a lot of assets to trade and maybe some of my contracts are onerous, but I do have cap space to play with and I can make something happen. The other interesting thing is I did not quite understand just how pissed off everybody was with Brian Burke and Ron Hextall. I did not realize that the level of discontent was so high. I knew it was high, but people are furious. And then I started to kind of dig around and figure out why. I forgot about this. Do you know how many games Sidney Crosby played last year?
He played all of them, didn't he?
Do you know how many games Evgeny Malkin played last year? Also all of them.
Really?
Yeah, they both played 82 games. So yeah. Penguins fans are like, it's hard getting guys to stay healthy and be productive in their 30s. These guys went above and beyond. And you still miss the playoffs. Like, it was a huge failing, which is why Brian Burke and Ron Hextall are now out of jobs. But my it is crazy because now you look at it for Dubas. My thinking would be, I really doubt I'm going to get 82 games out of Gino and Sid both next year. That just seems improbable. They also put up 93 and 83 points. So if you're Dubas, you really, really have to get to work quickly and build this out. And the funny part is, for all the warts that this team has, their defense isn't great. They don't know who's going to be playing in net for them next year because Jari's a UFA. Gentile wrote about this and Josh Yohe from The Athletic both wrote about this. His biggest job is finding forwards to fill out the gaps around Malkin and Crosby.
Yeah.
So it's a tall order for Dubas.
And it's one of those things, too. You know how here in Vancouver, we're kind of like, yeah, the Canucks need to improve. They need to have a better roster. What are they going to trade?
They do have a first-round pick. Pittsburgh does. I'll say that. They do a first-round pick. Finally, on the Kyle Dubas thing, before we go to break, I do want to play the other big part of this, which is, remember like 2 weeks ago when he said that the only place he was going to work was in Toronto and you wouldn't see him popping up anywhere else? 2 weeks later? He actually said a week, but it's 2 weeks later. Well, he had to address that because, you know, now he popped up in Pittsburgh as the new president of hockey ops, despite the fact that he said he wasn't going to take a job anywhere else.
If I was him, I would just be like, I am remarkably resilient.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways you could
have spun it. I am incredible.
That's one of them. You could have spun it in a million different ways. He did have to address it like almost right off the top, and we got to play it. Kyle Dubas is, and I'll let him speak, but to preface it, he was a little too honest speaking to Toronto media 2 weeks ago. Here's Kyle Dubas on how he ended up and why he said what he said to end up in Pittsburgh.
Kyle, welcome to Pittsburgh. In your final press conference with Toronto, you expressed just how difficult of a season it was on you and your family. Why was this the opportunity?
It was, and I mean, maybe I was too honest that day with how I was feeling in that exact moment. But it's in the past. The way that we viewed it was when we came to the last day there, so Friday the 19th, or I think that's the date in, I have in my head. When we got home the next day, you know, you get inundated with calls, texts, people want to come over to the house. It's nice, but it's also sad. And then the way that we viewed the next day was very early the next morning. I was on the phone with one of our staff there, and I had a 617 area code call, and I hung up, and it was a message from Sam, who told me that they had permission from Toronto. And my initial inkling was, you know, we need to take a breath here before we entertain other options, because that was our intention at the beginning of the week. And my wife then, you know, later in the day said, I actually think you should go and at least meet with them, because, you know, she said, it's, if they're great people and they have a long-term view of the organization, it's going to be a great fit for you in terms of what everybody is about, that you're going to work for and work with, and the staff has a great feel, then we're going to be moving anyway now.
So there it is. It all makes sense, right? When Kyle explains it, it all makes sense.
His wife was like, get a job.
Yeah.
You've been lounging around the house.
There were a lot of Leafs fans defending Dubas I saw yesterday, saying, well, you know, it's different now. He got broken up with. But when you go out in the media and say those words, I won't be popping up anywhere, you have to know that people are going to see you as a liar when you go and take
the Dubas
right?
defenders and the Dubas loyalists. They were in one yesterday.
It was amazing.
It's creepy almost.
Yeah,
the love affair that part of Leafs Nation has with Dubas.
Laddie sent along a tweet, which I'll surmise it. It was from a Leafs fan, I think. I can't even tell at this point. It's too emotional.
He's a Dubas fan now, not a Leafs fan.
Right. It basically said the reason that they love Dubas so much is that he came on board like a prospect would, like drafted, and then he grew in the organization to become an all-star. And I'm like, bro, this is fan fiction. Like, you need to... I don't know where you're going with this, but
we saw him grow before our very eyes.
He entered the organization as a computer boy, and he left as a hockey man. Like, I'm like, come on.
But he always kept the glasses because he was true to himself.
That's true. He always kept his glasses.
I like that. Enter as computer boy, leave as hockey man.
I think it was a Steve Simmons article, actually. I think that's how I got that. Okay, we got a lot more to get to on the program today. A reminder, it is Ask Us Anything Friday, so get your Ask Us Anythings in, and we will continue piling on the Toronto Maple Leafs by talking to Justin Cuthbert from Fan 590 next. I got to ask him what it was like yesterday watching all that unfold. It's been such a weird offseason for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it's really just begun. I can only hope there's more weirdness to follow. Justin Cuthbert's going to join us next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Friday. Happy Friday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Hour one of the program, we're right in the middle of it. Justin Cuthbert from Fan 590 in Toronto is going to join us in just a second here. Hour one of this program is brought to you by John Stone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at John Stone's Barbecues. No. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com. Let's go to the phone lines now. We are joined by our next guest. Happy to have him on the program. The Halford and Brough version of Toronto, Justin Cuthbert, host of the morning show on Fan 590 here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Good morning, Justin. How are you?
Morning, fellas. I'm pretty good. How about yourselves?
We're good. Thanks. Thanks for taking the time to do this. We appreciate it. Hey, so give me the proper adjective to describe yesterday in Toronto, when you got the anticipation and the excitement of the Brad Tree Living Presser, only to have it hijacked by the former general manager, Kyle Dubas, and his announcement that he's going to be the president of hockey ops in Pittsburgh.
Oh, it was quite interesting. I mean, I maybe undersold it a little bit doing our show today. I put it like maybe a 15% pettiness. You know, there's a lot of work that has to be done here, time crunch ahead, Stanley Cup final beginning tomorrow. Of course, they've got to get this announcement done, but everyone we talked to wanted to go a little bit higher than 15%. I mean, as Greg Wyshynski put it to us in our conversation this morning, nothing in public relations is an accident. So, the pettiness train, it continues to roll. It seems like this was not coincidental whatsoever, and it ultimately doesn't really matter in the end, but it seems like this story, as much as we kind of want to wash our hands of it, the Dubas connection to Toronto will live on, and we'll continue to talk about it until there's nothing left to talk about.
What is your ultimate conclusion about what happened between Dubas and Shanahan and why Dubas was fired?
Yeah, you know, more theories obviously spawned yesterday after he gets what I guess he asked for in Toronto, in Pittsburgh, being the guy who has all the autonomy, president of hockey operations, gets all that added to his title. I feel like he kind of went for the jugular. He was on a bit of a power trip. He tried to overthrow the government, and the government is Brendan Shanahan and MLSE, and I don't expect him to be successful in that regard, even though he thought he had pretty immense value, and he did have immense value in this organization. But yeah, if you go for the king, you can't miss, and even if you did connect, it felt like Shanny was going to be able to absorb that blow. I think if you go for someone's seat and they have the opportunity to hit back, they're going to do it. And Shanahan has enough cachet built up in this market and I guess in MLSE to survive that attack. But yeah, it seemed like it was a guy who wanted to unseat Shanahan and ultimately was unsuccessful. And he might have been more confident doing it knowing that Pittsburgh or Ottawa was going to give him exactly what he wanted anyway.
Who has a better chance of winning a Stanley Cup over the next, say, 2 or 3 years? Brad Treliving or Kyle Dubas?
That's a good question. I will go with Brad Treliving. I do think that Dubas is going to be very successful in Pittsburgh. I think this is kind of what he's cut out for. I think it's actually a perfect opportunity for him because his eye for professional talent is very, very strong. I think he's going to be able to surround Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Chris Letang with really high-end guys. But ultimately, I don't think it's going to be good enough to win. I still believe in Sidney Crosby. I'm less confident about Malkin and Letang, and I'm not really sure they're going to be able to squint hard enough and get a Stanley Cup contender, excuse me, out of that group. With the Leafs, I do think they kind of admitted yesterday that they're going to be taking a little bit of a step back. In fact, I think everything they were talking about was working toward, hey, we're not desperate anymore. We're not a desperate team. We don't have to win this year. It felt like that's what they were trying to say. And it might be, you know, working towards, hey, we can wash our hands clean of John Tavares in 2 years. And maybe in that third year, when he's costing $10 million less, perhaps, and still a decently productive player on a third line, maybe that's when we win because we've got Matthews sewn up and we've made our big decisions and we've been able to kind of look forward under this new regime. So I will say Treliving, I just don't expect it to happen in the next 2 seasons.
Is it looking possible, if not likely, that not only will Sheldon Keefe be back as the head coach, but the entire core four could be back next season?
Yeah, I think everyone's back. I think that's what they were kind of setting out for us yesterday. It was like, you know, no, Dubas is not here anymore. So we're not desperate. We don't have to win. There are no dire consequences because we are starting anew and we are starting fresh today with Brad Treliving. And I think if you're Treliving, and especially if you're Shanahan, we ran the numbers today, and he's been around for over 20%, one-fifth of the overall general managers who have ever guided a team that's been around for over 100 years. He's been through a lot of guys and a lot of opportunities with some big names, and he hasn't had that success. So it feels like he's got one last chance. And if you're in the self-preservation business, which everybody is, I feel like putting things off just a little bit and being like, hey, Brad, take your time. Let's build towards this. If you see a problem, let's work through it together. We can, make this another 5-year run here with the Maple Leafs. And the pressure's off just a little bit. And if the pressure is off, then you don't do a knee-jerk thing. And a knee-jerk thing, I guess, would be either firing Sheldon Keefe using the coaching bullet or trading a core four player and using that bullet. So I do think they kind of, out of self-preservation, maybe more than anything, I think everyone's going to be back.
So I guess there still are some pressing issues, though. Do they really want to go into next season with Austin Matthews, a pending unrestricted free agent, and ditto for William Nylander? What do they do with those two this offseason, if anything?
Definitely separate cases. I would say that more important than winning, more important than roster construction, would be signing Austin Matthews over the next 12 months for Brad Treliving. I think it is priority one. He said so himself. I wouldn't be surprised if the MLSE jet is heading to Sky Harbor Airport in Arizona as we speak. It is very, 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 very important. It is critical. He's got to get it done. And I think the success and failure of year one will hinge exclusively on getting that done and making sure it's not an issue. I do think it'll happen. I think Brad Treliving is a pretty impressive guy. I think he acquitted himself nicely. I think Austin Matthews wants us to be here. And I think that'll all work out because they're going to give him what he wants, probably, which is a ridiculous amount of money. With William Nylander, I think they can take the time a little bit. And I'm talking about, not using the coaching bullet, not trading the core four right away. The difference with the Nylander and Matthews is that you have a little bit more control. You have the leverage. He only has a 10-team no-trade list. So you can go into the season. You can evaluate. You can see if Treliving, wants to extend this partnership. You can explore an extension, or you can explore a trade with pretty much two-thirds of the entire league. So I think there are different cases. Matthews holds all the cards. William just has a couple. And I think ultimately they're going to work towards getting both of them signed. But one definitely takes priority.
How much of keeping the core four and keeping Sheldon Keefe as the head coach, kicking the can down the road on those decisions, is just about time management and having so many other things to do in the next month, because if you go to the Leafs cap friendly page, it's like half the forwards are already out of contract. Like, I don't know how many forwards they've got signed, but it's not many. And if you look at the defense too, there might have to be some changeovers in defense as well. How much of it is just there's so much on the plate of Brad Treliving and Brendan Shanahan that they just have to make those decisions later?
Well, you can kind of compartmentalize, because the big decisions, I guess, core four decisions, they kind of have to be made before July 1st. And you mentioned there's so many unrestricted free agents. There's so many players you have to sign. I guess most of that work comes after July 1. So if you're going to trade Mitch Marner, you pretty much have to do it over the next month, because his no move is going to kick in. He's not going to accept a deal to just anywhere. John Tavares, you cannot get yourself out from under that. He moved back to the city. His roots are here. He's got three kids. I mean, you're not having that conversation even without the guy who signed him and Kyle Dubas. So it feels like, yeah, they're not going to rush into anything. And if you're going to make a move involving a core four player, you pretty much have to rush into it. So I think they answered that question for you, which means that they can just look towards, hey, making the best of a not a bad scenario, but not an ideal scenario where you have to sign a bunch of players in a pretty weak free agent class. And that's why I think they're kind of okay with taking a step back, that they're not going to do something desperate or hastily in a real desperate attempt to win, because you know, we always kind of circled a little bit of a step back with the latter years of John Tavares and having to sign Austin Matthews to a contract extension. Like, it was already built in at this point or around this point that they were going to have to take a step back. And now, looking at everything they have to do after July 1, it's going to be a little bit of patchwork. And they're going to have to, you know, sign some players, but they're also going to have to keep themselves open to trades and internal development and then doing stuff in season to get the best version of this group out onto the ice. It might take an entire year to get a suitable roster onto the ice for the playoffs, kind of like it did this past season when they were really a far better team on paper, at least come April, than they were when they started the season in October.
So has the big drama happened this offseason in Toronto then? Like, are you telling us that it's pretty unlikely that there's going to be a big bold trade or a big bold signing in Toronto this offseason?
There could be a big, bold signing because they do have cap space, but they got to be really, really careful with that cap space. I mean, there are a couple intriguing names out there. I mean, Dmitry Orlov, Matt Dumbo, those guys would be really, really nice on a blue line and maybe in a partnership with Morgan Riley. But if we're talking about major trades, if we're talking about a big coaching change, if we're talking about anything in the boardroom other than, hey, one of Brad Treliving's buddies is going to be his associate, I don't think there's going to be much change. And I think it's on Leaf fans over the next little bit here to kind of readjust his expectations, because it's been Stanley Cup or bust for a couple of years. It's been, hey, dire consequences. And despite them wanting Kyle Dubas back, the only real consequence, I think, of them losing is going to be Kyle Dubas losing their job, even though they made it pretty clear that they wanted him back anyway.
Justin, this was great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do this morning. We really appreciate it. Enjoy whatever the offseason has in store. Let's do this again as we get closer to the draft and free agency and all that good stuff.
Thanks, boys. Cheers. Have a great show.
You too. Thanks. That's Justin Cuthbert from Fan 590, the morning show, the Halbro version of Toronto, here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Mike, the urologist from Brockville. Let's read one of his Ask Us Anythings.
Three. He sent three Ask Us Anythings in before 6 a.m. That's a urologist that I'd like to work with.
This is the one I'm going to choose. Ask us anything, and we do mean anything. It can be about sports. It can be about life, movies, whatever. Interest rate policy, sure. Okay. Ask us anything. It is my in-laws' 50th anniversary today. At what point does it become the responsibility of the kids to plan anniversary parties instead of the husband/spouse? Or does it ever? I actually need this one answered because we haven't got anything good planned, so I need to know if I should be scrambling right now.
Interesting question, Michael. I've thought about this.
My sister and I did a big party for my parents' 30th
anniversary.
Yeah.
There is a certain point where you have to take the reins on these things.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget a few years ago, someone saw my mom mowing the lawn.
Oh.
Not because she did it regularly. I can't remember what the reasoning behind
that
it
was. That doesn't make her boys look good.
No, yeah. That is, at a certain point, that is your responsibility.
Yeah.
So I had to chastise her. I'm like, don't make me look bad. Get back in the house. No more lawn. No more mowing the lawn. You can do some light gardening. That's it. And then
my mom used to passive aggressively mow the lawn when it was my job as a teenager. But on Saturday mornings, laddie, you'll like this. I always liked to watch the Blue Jays game. And that was when I like was a like diehard Jays fan before they'd actually won the World Series. So it was a long time ago. And so my parents would be like, you got to cut the lawn, cut the lawn. And this is before I loved cutting the lawn. Like I didn't have the love and the appreciation, the Hank Hill appreciation for cutting the lawn. So I'd be watching the Blue Jays and be like, come on, Nelson Liriano, get a hit. And then I'd see my mom through the window cutting the lawn. I'd be like, oh, I'm in trouble now. It looks really hot out there.
She just cuts it just in front of the window and just keeps pacing back and forth. On the lawn, just looking at you the entire time.
I don't know what my dad was doing, by the way.
Not cutting the lawn.
Take the lawnmower into your room while you're sleeping and turn it on.
Tony the electrician, we did say you can ask us about anything. So oftentimes people will throw pretty profound, important questions at us. Because, hey, why not? The two idiots on the radio might know something. Tony wants to know, Tony the electrician, hey, gentlemen, I listened to the podcast version, so if you read this, I'll have to hear it later. But I have two Ask Us Anythings. One, my wife and I are about to have our first child, a boy. Yeah, congrats, Tony. That's great. Any suggestions on a name? We've had this question in multiple forms before. The answer is almost always and exclusively Gary, but I've realized now that Gary is not the only old school name going the way of the dodo bird.
Well, of course not.
There's a lot of them. For example, when's the last time you heard someone, and a boy, tell you that they named their baby Ken?
That's been a while.
It's going to blow up at the Barbie movie.
Yeah, I haven't
think it is.
I haven't met a young Randy in a while.
Randy is
one. I think Randy needs
to
make a comeback.
Percy? You don't see too many Percys.
You know Percy.
Wow, did you ever see a Percy?
Yeah.
Was that like a popular baseball name at one point? Yeah, I guess.
Raymond or Ray, like Baby Ray. You never know, this is my Baby Ray.
Baby Ray.
No one ever.
My Baby Ray.
Yeah.
Does Frank get much?
Frank gets nothing now.
Yeah, you're right. No Frank.
There's no Franks, right?
It's my baby, Frank.
What'd you name your kid? Frank.
Put it this way. If the name that you're suggesting is also one that like you'll find in the Legion smoking indoors.
Right, yeah.
That's a name. But we need to get, because here's the thing.
Well, that's where you go. Go to the Legion. And just ask all the old dudes what their names are, and just make a list and pick one of those names.
Carl. When's the last time this is my baby, Carl. True. Like, you've never heard that before.
Use that as inspiration.
But here's the thing. There's all the sort of new age Jaden, Braden, Caden, Layden type names.
Right.
I don't think there's any Laydens.
There should be.
If you want to be the cool parent now, you have to go back and pick a name that nobody's picking anymore. Walter, for example.
Yep.
And on that note, this is really impeccable timing. Someone just texted in, did you see this? That Walter, not Walter, but Walter Sedin, and I can't remember which one his dad is. It's either Daniel or Henrik, I'll tell you that.
50-50 chance you got it right.
Walter Sedin is a budding young soccer talent, prodigy, if you will. I don't know if he's a prodigy, but he's with Vancouver
Whitecaps. Yeah, that's cool.
So the Whitecaps Academy team.
How old is he? When can we reach out for an interview?
I think he's 16.
Oh, it's yeah.
We're going to wait. We're going to wait on that. Yeah. But he plays on a team. The Whitecaps play in that BC One League. Mm-hmm. And the league is essentially designed for collegiate-aged players. But the Whitecaps throw a lot of academy players, like 15, 16-year-olds, to give them better experience. He is on a team that also includes Riley Ferraro, son of Ray and Cammy.
That's cool.
What a team.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just go watch and just hang out on the sidelines and hope that one of their famous parents shows up.
Finally, the Sedin Ferraro connection.
Yeah. Like, it's about time that this paid off, right? So, anyway, someone texted us in about that. I wanted to get that out there as well since we were talking about Walter. Walter Sedin. They just did a little 3-minute vignette on the Whitecaps Twitter page, or if you want to check that out. It's like Canucks, Twitter.
Ask Us Anything from Tyler. Where is your excitement for the start of the BC Lions season? It is,
it's very high.
It's mid for me just because, mid. Yeah.
Hello, fellow children.
You're really leaning into the mid. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's mid for me. And we've got Amar Doman on the show, is it 8:30 or 8 o'clock? 8:30. Amar's going to join us. So The two things I was really excited about for last season was new owner, Amar Doman. What's he going to do? What's this going to look like? And Nathan Rourke, a quarterback, right? Mm-hmm. So Amar has been the owner. I think he's been a terrific owner.
Yeah.
Just a fantastic owner. But I know, like, it's a given that he's going to be good now. He's going to be a good owner. And let's just say I'm going to have to be convinced by Vernon Adams as the quarterback. And I know he played very well last night in an exhibition game against Calgary, mm-hmm. but it was against a bunch of backups. The BC Lions start their season next week in Calgary against the Stampeders. So I think it's in Calgary.
They play Calgary, and then they come home on the 17th to take on the Elks at BC Place.
Right. Okay.
So,
so June 17th mm-hmm. is the first home opener. Is the home opener.
Yeah.
I am hopeful, but not sure that Vernon Adams is capable of turning the Lions into a Grey Cup contender.
I mean, if the question is, how excited are you for the start of the season, I'd say very, because I'm going to go and watch LL Cool J at BC Place.
Right.
Right? That's great. Here's where I'm at with this. I'm not really all that concerned about what the on-field product looks like in year one post-Nathan Rourke. I am more excited for what Amar Doman is doing as an owner to make this fun again. Make the Lions...
But part of the fun is having a winning team.
Well,
part of the fun of last year, most of the fun, frankly, for me, was like you can have all the street parties you want, and that's good. And I'm not saying don't stop those. Those things are important. But for me, when it comes to the Lions, I want a winning team on the field.
I think they've got a real opportunity to build up the kind of fan support and experience and camaraderie amongst the people that are going that the Vancouver Canadiens do with baseball.
Yeah.
Where, let's be honest, we're not 1,000% consumed by wins or losses. Now, they can't
Can I just tell you, I'm worried about the CFL.
I know.
I'm worried. And a few years ago, if you would have asked me, pre-pandemic, you know, are you worried about the CFL? I'm like, no, the CFL always muddles its way through, right? And we've seen teams in this league fold. They tried the American expansion. You know, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. As long as, you know, it's huge on the prairies. You know what rattled me was seeing all those empty seats at the Grey Cup in Regina.
Yeah, I wasn't
like
great.
That rattled me a little bit. I think there are, like, if you lose the prairies interest,
right,
then you got trouble. And I think Edmonton is a struggle right now because the Elks were just awful and have been for a while. I think Calgary's a struggle because the stadium stinks, mm-hmm. right? So the facilities there are bad. And then Winnipeg and Regina, they got the new stadiums and it's awesome there. Yeah, but like, I keep coming back to the Grey Cup. And I hope it was just like some sort of screw up there. Maybe they priced the tickets too high, or I know there was disappointment that the Rough Riders didn't get to it, but
yeah.
Still, like watching that Grey Cup and seeing like entire sections of empty seats at a Grey Cup in Saskatchewan rattled me.
Well, we can talk to Amar Doman about how he sees the health of the overall league. He's one of the few owners in the league. There's only a handful of them, less than 10. So we can talk to him at 8:30. He's going to be joining the program. 8 o'clock is EJ Raddick. 7 o'clock coming up next is Daniel Kaplan. So that means at 7:30, we'll probably have to do the lion's shares of submissions from the listeners, Ask Us Anythings, and What We Learns. Get them in. Dunbar Lumber text line is 650-650. What We Learns and Ask Us Anythings on the Halford and Brough Show. Daniel Kaplan, sports business writer from The Athletic, is going to join us next. A couple of interesting stories that we want to dive into that he's been covering, including the Evander Kane bankruptcy situation. He's got updates on that. And this situation with Bally Sports and regional rights holders for Major League Baseball in the U.S. and how they're not holding them anymore. It's Major League Baseball is in charge now. It's a very interesting story. The shifting landscape of broadcast rights and big business as it comes to sports in the United States. We'll talk to Daniel Kaplan about that next on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.